Now, what was happening at the time of the Gzeira of Haman, the time of Purim? We were not in the best place with the Rabbeinu Shleilim, right? We know, we've spoken about it many times, it was a time of Hester Panim. Why does it mean Hester Panim? So there's actually sort of three levels at which we can exist in our relationship with Hashem. Number one is that we recognize that Hashem is our Father and He's our boss and we are very close to Him and we're looking at Him and He's looking at us, and that's called the time of Gilui Panim, that Hashem is totally with us and there for us. Then there's a time when we turn ourselves away from Him, and it's a sort of Hester Panim, but it's not a complete Hester Panim. The lights are not completely out. Hashem, so to speak, turns over the reins of His Hashkacha to a Malach, and He gives us like a temporary Sar, a temporary Elohim that will be mashpia to us and lead us and guide us. And that's the typical state of Golos. Hashem sort of acts as though He's not involved, but really He hasn't completely forsaken us. But he's put a Malach in charge of us, and then we become like one of all the Goyim, which is like the fondest wish of some Yid and Nebuch, to be like one of all the Goyim. But this is a state that can't endure forever, because in truth, we weren't created to be this way. We were created to be a nation that's one with Hashem. We're not one of 70, we're one of one. We're the Aleph to the Goyim's Ayin. Aleph is the name of what we've spoken about. It's a letter that represents the Rabbeinu Shleilim. It's the Aluf is Shaloilim. There's another letter in the Aleph base which sounds very similar and seems quite similar, but it's not exactly the same, and that's an Ayin. The difference between an Aleph and an Ayin is that the Aleph is the purer, a more holy version of the Ayin. Even in the sound of it, an Aleph is a very pure sound. It's the most elementary sound, the first sound that one can make, really. Every sound that you make has to have an Aleph at the end of it to be heard. An Ayin is a more earthy. It's similar, but it's a more physical version, let's call it, of an Aleph. There's many places, a lot of Mashalim for where you see this, just say one now. Everyone knows that there's a word Osher and Osher. One Osher means wealth, that's with an Ayin, and one Osher is with an Aleph and means happiness. When people are younger, generally they think that wealth is better than happiness, because they think that wealth will bring them happiness. Generally, older people know that that's not the case. If someone is looking for something, they should be looking for Osher with an Aleph, that's happiness, whether or not they're wealthy. They can say either that the ultimate wealth is happiness, that's somebody who still hasn't gotten out of his head that wealth is the most important thing, so he claims that happiness is wealth. But somebody who's really gets it knows that no, Osher, happiness is happiness, that's the goal. The counterfeit version of happiness is wealth. You think that if you'll have wealth, then you'll be happy. You think that the having of wealth is happiness. The way we know this isn't true is just look around, look at all the wealthy people, see how miserable most of them are. I'm not saying none of them are happy. I'm not saying that wealth can't provide some measure of enjoyment in life, but it's not going to substitute for happiness. It's a counterfeit substitute. Many words and many concepts, the counterfeit version of them is an ayin as opposed to an aleph. Not for now. I'll give one more example. I'm not even going to explain it. An otzel and an atzil. An otzel is a lazy person. An atzil is a noble person. They, from a surface view, they seem similar, but they're coming and going from completely different places. Anyways, back to what we're talking about. So this state of existence with sort of an intermediary between us and Hashem, not a stam an intermediary, but a malach, is a temporary state of affairs. Ultimately, either we need to do tshuva, or we get to a place like we got to on Purim, where we have completely abandoned the shaykhus to Hashem, and we are ready to be destroyed. The Gzeira of Purim was real. At that point, Hashem, there was a full Hester upon him, a complete Hester upon him, that Hashem was not even running our affairs through a malach. We were left totally to the vagaries of mazel and teva. In other words, Hashem took us, the Jews, or we took ourselves, who are a nation that lives in a different system. We don't live in the Mazel system. And we were thrown into the world of Mazel, and with almost no guide rope anymore, with nobody taking care of us from on top. Meaning that whatever happens to us happens as a result of the non-Jewish system, of the Mazel system of the world. And we don't have a place in the Mazel system because we don't have a Sar, we don't have a planet, and we don't have a place on earth to be. We don't belong anywhere. We're not invited, we're not welcome anywhere. When we're in that state, when we're in the state of perfection with Hashem, so then the whole world wishes we were by them. But when we're not in that place, so we're constantly intruders and foreigners, and we don't have nobody protecting us. It's like being, you know, in a criminal organization with no, nowadays it's funny, they call it a rabbi, you know, like everybody needs a rabbi. You need somebody above you protecting you. But imagine if you're dealing with criminals the whole day and you don't have a godfather, you have nobody protecting you. So then anybody can do what they want to you. You have no protection. That's what the Jews are when Hashem turns his face away from us. He left us to the vagaries and the whims of Mazel. That was the gzerah that was happening. Now, there was a way out. As we see at the end, Hashem did get us out of there. But the gzerah of Purim was that we were completely abandoned to the Mazalis. Now, I'll point that out in one other way. When we go out of Eretz Yisrael, I meant to say this before, when we go out of Eretz Yisrael, so it says, anybody who's dar b'chutz la'aretz is ki'ilu ein lo eloka. Now, some people say, oh, that means that ayv davayt is dar. Narishkeit, it's not what it means. It means that he doesn't have the direct influence of an eloka, because Hashem is our elokim. That happens when we're in Eretz Yisrael. When we're in chutz la'aretz, a guy who's in chutz la'aretz, he has an elohim. Maybe it's a minor elohim. It's Hashem's assistant, so to speak, who's only dealing with that nation, but at least he has someone on top of him, some kind of a godfather. A Jew in Chutz La'aretz, ein lo eloha, because Hashem focuses his attention on Eretz Yisrael. It's called the land asher ein elokecha ba me'ereshis haaretz, me'ereshis hashana v'adarchas shana. Hashem's eyes are constantly in Eretz Yisrael, because this is where we are. And that's what the Chazal mean when it says a person goes out there, is that he's lacking that direct hashkachic support of an eloka. Okay, so here is the time of Purim, and Haman wants to get rid of the Jews. So how's he going to do it? Where does he look? What does he have to look for if he's looking for a day? He's a person that believes in omens, and he believes in astrology, and he didn't just believe in it. It was true. It existed, and Haman knew how to deal with it. So what's he going to look for if he's looking to use astrology to pick the best time to get rid of the Jews? He has to look for the day that comes out best according to his mazel, according to the Amaleki and the Hamanic mazel. It won't do him any good to look for a day that's specifically bad for the Jews. You know why? Because there's no such thing as a day that's bad for the Jews. There's no such thing as mazel for Jews. We don't have a mazel. If you go look up in the mazel papers and try to find what's the worst day for the Jews, there's no day that's good or bad, really, because we don't exist in that system at all. The only thing he can do is look in his astrology, in his horoscope or whatever, and find the day that's best for him. And that's what Haman was doing. So, what was Rabbi Nishlam doing at the same time? So we know that generally, let me just show it to you in the Pasuk, okay, just up to this point, let's read the first few words of the Pasuk, and we'll see how this is exactly what's going on. It says that Haman threw Hippil Pur, he threw a Pur. A Pur, as we explained, is a lottery that's specifically geared to manipulate and to identify the optimum times in the mazalos, in the system of Teva, what's going to work out best for him. And he threw it in several different ways to make sure that it really was accurate. Hu ha-goral. This lottery will determine the destinies. You know, the word goral as destiny doesn't even apply to Jews at all, because like we said, Jews don't have destiny. Destiny means something which is pretty much predetermined. This is what is going to happen. The Jew, you never know what's going to happen, because he's not in that system. He can do tshuva in a second. He can turn everything around. He can daven to Hashem and change his mazel. So there's no goral. But Haman was working according to his Purim, and he was figuring out what was the destiny. But whose destiny was he looking for according to whose lights, like we explained? His own, because the Jews don't have, and those are the next two words in the Pasuk. Hu ha-goral lefnei Haman. He could only do the goral, he could only determine the destiny in front of Haman according to what was going to happen to Haman and going to happen to his nation. He couldn't look at the Jewish mazel because, as we explained, there is no set Jewish mazel. Now, what's the Ribbono Shel Olam going to do about all this? So normally, in most of the Nisim, Chanukah, for example, the Pesach, and all of the other Nisim that are brought down everywhere in Chazal and in Shas and over the history of the various places that had Nisim, Nisim always took place in the following manner. The Ribbono Shel Olam, let's say the Goyim were persecuting us, and in the, according to Teva, according to the Derech HaTeva, they should have been able to accomplish whatever they wanted to do to us, whatever they wanted. Comes the Ribbono Shel Olam and says, forget about Teva. I'm going to do a Nes. I'm going to use the other Marechet, because like we said, the Marechet, the system that works for us and with us, is the system of miracles. An example. We said before, you take a rock and you throw it in the air. According to Teva, it is always going to fall. The only way it's not going to fall is if something interferes with it. Either a person puts out his hand and grabs it while it's in the air, or the Ribbono Shel Olam does that. He says, you know what? According to the system of Teva, this rock should hit the ground. This bullet should hit the Jew that it was aimed at. I'm going to change things. I make the rules. So I'm going to come in from my outside system, the system of Nes, and I'm going to deflect the system of Teva. Meaning, I'm going to stop using the system of Teva for this moment. I'm going to make it inoperative, and I'm going to apply the system of Nes. That's how things worked. Mitzrayim was Nisim one after the next when we got out of there. Chanukah is about miracles, things burning when they shouldn't be burning and lasting, and you know, tiny amount of tzaddikim destroying a tremendous army. Those are Nisim. That's one way to do it. On Purim, it was almost as though Hashem couldn't do this kind of a system. Not that he couldn't, Hashem could do whatever he wants. But for that system to work, we have to be in that system. That system has to be operative. But this system was shut off. The lights were out. The room was dark. Everything was disconnected. We were not living in that system. We weren't even living in the system in a surrogate way with Malach Mechoyel taking charge of us. Malach Matat. We weren't even living there. We were completely like blown by the wind and totally at the mercy of the Teva world. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam, let's not forget, I can also get involved in Teva. But the way I'm going to do it this time, I'm not going to do a Nes. It's not going to be any open miracle, which we all know is the point of Purim. It was all done by Hester. You don't find Hashem's name in the Megillah because the Shem Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, that's the name of Nes. That's the name that's above Teva. That's the name that gets involved when he wants to do something which breaks the rules. Hashem says, no, I'm not going to break the rules. And I'm going to do it. I'll do something much better. I'm going to change the rules. And that Hashem never does. That's the biggest miracle of all. I'll give you an example so you can understand it. Imagine if you're in high school and you have this kid in your class that's a real dope, very low GPA and just not interested in anything. Doesn't get anything done. They don't know extracurricular and they're not doing any chesed. They're not doing anything. And then you find out that this kid got into Harvard. And you go over to him and say, you know, you don't know the kid very well. Maybe, I don't know, for whatever reason, you don't know the kid's last name. And you say, how'd you get into Harvard? I mean, Harvard, you got to have a 4.0 GPA. You have to have extracurriculars. You have to have so many things to qualify, even just to get an interview. Forget about getting in. How did you get in? I mean, you're no good, Nick. You haven't done anything. Yeah, he says, oh, you forgot my last name. It's Trump. Oh, that's it. The penny drops. Say, okay, fine, I get it. In other words, you don't belong there. But your father is Donald Trump. A very wealthy man. I mean, when he thought of this mashal, he was before he was president, and now he's president of the United States, and even a kosher cane. So they took you in. They broke their rules. Their rule is, you got to have a 4.0 GPA. For this kid, they said, okay, fine, whatever. This kid we want for other reasons, we'll break the rules. That would be very cool. And that is cool when that happens. I mean, it's not fair, but it's interesting. Imagine, though, if the kid would tell you, you know, I got into Harvard. My father didn't get them to accept me against the rules. He made them change the rules. Now, to get into Harvard, all you need is a 2.0 GPA. You don't have to have any extracurricular. You don't have to have done any extra chassadim or been a good human being of any kind. He wanted me to get in, but he wanted me to get in according to the rules. So he had them change the rules. And from now on, until it changes back, Harvard doesn't require any of that. That would be 100 times cooler. Imagine if somebody could get that done. If they had that much power and influence that they don't get Harvard to make an exception to once, okay, we'll break the rules one time. No. It changed the rules from within. That's what the Rabbeinu Shalom did on Purim. He said, look, according to Teva, the Jews are in a pickle. The Muhammad's got them. He's got them dead to rights, according to the Mazalis. This is the best day for Haman, the most auspicious day for him. We have no protection. We're completely wiped. What do? Says Hashem, I'll tell you what I do. I am, as the Vilna Gaon says the words, I am Meshadid Ma'arochis and Meshana Mazalis. I am going to change the system from within. Hofachas Mazalis and Meshadis Ma'arochis. I'm changing, I'm playing with the system so that the rules are no longer the same. The rules used to say that 13 Adar, great day for Haman. Jews, they got nothing to protect them. Says Hashem, no, I'm turning it around. This is a terrible day for Haman. This is a terrible day for the Goyim. This is going to be the best. I don't know if it means that now, I don't think it means that the Yidden went into the system of Mazel at this point. It's not clear. It doesn't seem like it. But I'm going to change the system of Teva now from within. And that's how the Rabbeinu Shalom saved our lives. Meaning that while Haman was doing a poor down on earth, Hippil poor, he threw a poor. Who are Gairil? That's the destiny. You know who threw the poor? Haman threw a poor. You know who else threw a poor? The Rabbeinu Shalom threw a poor. Hippil poor. That's why the pasuk is ambiguous about it. It's vague. It doesn't say Hippil Haman poor. Or B'chodesh HaRishon Haman Hippil. Doesn't say who did it. That's what Rashi says. I don't know who did it. It's not clear who did it. What do you mean it's not clear? It's very clear who did it. Haman did it. No, I'll tell you what, it's not clear. It's not clear that there was a second poor going on at the exact same time. We're in Shemayim. Haman was throwing a poor in this world. A poor, as we explained, the definition of a poor is a lottery which determines the course of the nature of the mazalos. So Haman was throwing his poor. But his poor was a poor substitute for the Rabbeinu Shalom's poor. The Rabbeinu Shalom also threw a poor. So how many poors were there? There were two poors. And that's why it's called Chag HaPurim. Multiple poors. There were two poors going on at the same time. Hashem said, you can throw a poor. And a poor might be effective in the normal thing, but I'm going to change the system. That's the beauty of it. So despite us being under the mazalis and not quote-unquote under Hashem anymore, it ended up okay. Because Haman's good mazal became our good mazal. And that's the meaning that we say in the piyut, Asher Haini, after the Megillah, we read this piyut. What does it say over there? Nefach pur lepurenu. His pur changed to our pur. Open, mefurish, clear. He had a pur and we had a pur. Our pur won. We had a better pur because our pur was thrown by the Rabbeinu Shalom who makes the purs. And that's the nace of Purim. That's the incredible miracle of Purim. That it wasn't only that Hashem said, okay, listen, Jews are in trouble. I'm going to come riding in as if on my white horse and save them. I'm going to do a nest. No, Hashem says, not going to do a nest. I'm going to do much more than that. I'm going to change the rules for my people. Again, it required the beginnings of Tshuva. It required Mordechai and Esther and Tefillah and everything that we spoke about because Tefillah is the way one changes their mazel and their shefa min hashamayim. But that's what happened. It was a totally different system of miracle than had ever happened before. That's the greatness of Purim. If we would say Chag HaPur and not Chag HaPurim, we would have no idea what's going on. And that's why the Pasuk uses the word Pur, because the Pur was this mysterious, behind-the-scenes thing that was going on, which is actually what saved us. but it's called Purim and not Pur. It's very interesting. The day that Haman threw the Pur, so there's an argument in the Mefarshim exactly. It says it was B'chodesh HaRishon, the first month. It doesn't say which day. Most Mefarshim understand that it was the 13th day of Nisan or the 14th. But Me'am Lois brings a day which says that whenever it says B'chodesh, it means the first day of the Chodesh, as if B'rishon B'chodesh. So it comes out that Haman, according to that, threw the Pur on the first day of the Chodesh. The first day of the Chodesh was, I'm sorry, Chodesh Nisan, until the following year, Yud Gimel Adar. How many days is that? If you make the Cheshbon, it's 336 days, because in a lunar year, there's 354 days, and there's 18 days missing from Yud Gimel Adar until the next Aleph Nisan. So you do 354 minus 18, you come to 336. Why is that an important number? Again, this is without the Bnei Yisoschid that says it was an Ibriyar. Leave that out. What's 336? 336 is the exact gematria of the word Purim. Meaning, and this is the godless of it, that the minute that Haman was throwing his Pur on Rosh Chodesh Nisan last year, the Rebbe Shalom was laughing. Yeshiv Hashemayim Yitzchak. And he was saying, ah, you're throwing a Pur. That's cute. I'm also throwing a Pur. Together we have Purim. And the remez is that in 336 days from now, in Purim days from now, you're going to see whose Pur is going to win. Nefach Pur Lepureinu. His Pur is going to turn into our Pur. Shekoyach.